So if thinking about tribunals in the future, and you can imagine that we may have other situations that arise where a tribunal is needed, we might not want that, but that might be the case. What kinds of checks and balances would you put in place in how other tribunals are constituted to try and address this problem?
Well, in the first place, the statute here guarantees the independence of the judges. The statute also guarantees independence of the office of the prosecutor. And I think this independence of the office of the prosecutor has been abused to the extent that the prosecutor, in refusing to indict the RPF perpetrators, even when the Security Council mandate directed clearly that all the people without distinction that perpetrated the crimes should be indicted, in spite of the fact that the RPF itself has admitted, in spite of the fact the prosecutor himself has said so many times that we're investigating RPF, they will be indicted, the fact that the prosecutor is unable to do this, presumably due to other influences, and he can hide behind prosecutorial independence, I think it's an abuse of the notion of independence. This would be an organ to hold the prosecutor to account, to say, look, your mandate, you've not been able to meet your mandate, you've not been able because you've turned the court into a victor's court, and that at the end of the tribunal, there's every indication that the violence will start all over, as long as one of the parties believe that they too were victims, they believe that justice has not been totally done, they believe victors justice, and as the factors that led to the crisis in the first place remain, with thousands and thousands, you know, millions of Hutus now as refugees, not in the sub-region but across the world, there will be time they want to come back to Rwanda, they want to regain their land, the land issue remains unresolved, they want free and democratic election, one man, one vote, under international supervision. They want that this injustice should be... Of course, you know exactly that the conflict itself is playing out now in the Congo. Now, as long as the prosecutor cannot prosecute the RPF, the perception that the tribunal has condoned impunity will remain, and therefore that will be a viable factor to start the war again once the tribunal. As long as the tribunal is here and the ability to arrest, it serves as some form of, it preempts, you see, people looking at the tribunal as it is on the continent, not only in Rwanda, but in the African continent, it serves as a monument to people who might like to take up arms and kill people at that massive scale, that, oh, look, that could be you. Those people there, that could be you. Mm-hmm. But as long as the tribunal is not, and as long as the many dictators on the continent can continue to stonewall in ratifying even the treaty of the ICC, or if there were to be a special tribunal of this nature, they will use all sorts of limitation, most of, they will sign all sorts of, to limit their participation, to make sure that they're not held accountable. Mm-hmm. They'll put the politics of it ahead. Mm-hmm. As long as the African Union remains a club for dictators on the continent, they don't really have the power to say no. I believe that that act of impunity that has been condoned by not going after all the perceived perpetrators of the crimes will remain a scar, a weak law. on the conscience of this tribunal. And I say so for good reason, because one of the reasons why it has been ruled that it's a genocide is because of the fact that the Tutsis were targeted. Now, when you have a tribunal that targets the Hutu, it becomes a sort of judicial genocide. So judicial genocide. And did the tribunal at the United Nations, did they do justice? No, they didn't do justice. As long as that perception remains very, very strong, especially on the majority of Rwandans, not just the majority of Rwandans, but majority of people of the ethnic, the same ethnic composition like the Hutus in Congo, in Congo Brazzaville, in Central Africa, in Cameroon, and the Tutsi that constitute the Himas in Uganda and other places, the wider ethnic configuration, as long as it remains a major problem for there. So I believe that if another tribunal were to be set up, yes, there should be independence of the prosecutor's office, but it should be well defined to say that we'll hold you accountable at some point in time in order for you to justify that you carry out your mandate consistent with the United Nations resolution, with the statute. With the judges, there is very little we can do, because this comes from member state of the UN. And if I can say this from the African continent, some of the smaller states where at the moment of time war is going on, I doubt whether the government of these countries will submit to the Security Council the name of a judge who is truly independent. It must be someone who has rendered service or rendered service to the regime of power in respective countries. You can count, look at the countries, the background of the judges. I say with due respect, some of them are very, very good, some are very fair-minded. Some of them have transcended the limits of being subservient to their respective countries. But so many of them are still very, very, especially some on the African continent, and some of the some from the Asian countries, some from the islands. Mm-hmm. Some of them, you find out their background, just read their CV and find out their background, you find that it is very, very difficult. They come with that concept in mind, and the potential for influence, political influence, is still very, very great. If you look at the first judgments that we had from here, and the judgments we're having lately, you find that they have overturned themselves several times, because some of the notions were just obnoxious. The notion of joint criminal enterprise, developed right from the Tadic case, have been so much abused to trial and conviction by association. It has been so much abused. And if this tribunal should close down, and perhaps the tribunal for Yugoslavia, without them putting that notion into context, and if it were to be used as jurisprudence, not only at the international tribunal level, but also in national jurisdiction, imagine what dictatorships can make of that. So some of these legal notions that were conceived in order to address a particular situation now have a potential to be a weapon in the hands of dictators to perpetuate further genocide, judicial genocide, in the community and the country in which they preside, or as tools of oppression in order to remain in power. So my suggestion is that there should be a potential, apart from this, that apart from just having a review of the cases, the UN should put in place a structure that can review some of these decisions and really have a good debate about that, so that the tribunal themselves, the judges, will know whether they succeeded, one, in meeting their mandate, and two, if the legal precedent that they laid out for the international community are going to do good or bad for international justice.